I suspect all of us can remember times when we did something wrong and we anxiously waited for punishment from our parents, from our teachers, maybe somebody here from a magistrate. I can remember one time particularly that stands out for me where I'd done something wrong. This was in Sweden. I was a boy of about 10, and I'd gone with my friends to do something, and it was just annoying to the neighbors. And came back home, and I was waiting that there would be a knock on the door. And the person would come and tell my parents, because when we'd annoyed the neighbor, she said, "I know who you are." So all that evening was a time of waiting. We would all be horrified if people were allowed to do anything and get away with it. We would say, that's not right, that people could just do whatever they liked and destroy people's lives and they were not held accountable. We would not want that. And as we look around the world, we see many instances of people ruthlessly exploiting others, doing terrible things to other people, and they seem to get away with it. Some of them are national leaders, some are in finance, some are traffickers of drugs and people and animals and all sorts of things that people do, and they seem to get away with it. And we say, that's not right. Something should be done. And so sometimes for us, the message of God's judgment seems harsh. And we feel a bit uncomfortable, nervous about talking about God's judgment. But it's one that should fill us with thankfulness and hope. God is not asleep. He sees what's happening. God is not powerless. He does act, and he will act. And so what we're going to look at today is, first of all, the need for judgment, and then the taunt of judgment that we see in this passage, and the case for judgment. And then I want us to have our lives examined before God. So first of all, the need for judgment. All through the Bible, we see very clearly that God is in control. He's ruling. This is his world, and he's concerned for his world. He is the king. He's in charge. Secondly, we see that human beings are guilty of many terrible things. The powerful ruthlessly exploit and plunder and abuse. And in fact, all of us stand guilty before God of doing wrong things. And thirdly, that God is the judge. There is a time when God says, enough. I'm going to put things right now. Judgment means that justice triumphs over wrong. The good triumphs over evil. And in the end, God's will be done. Habakkuk did not have a problem believing in God as the judge. There was no problem for Habakkuk in believing that God is the judge. His problem was, why doesn't God do something? And then when God says he will do something, he says, well, how can the righteous judge act like that? I can't believe that he would do that sort of thing. As I said earlier, God's judgment should, in fact, bring praise from us. Just have a look at these verses from Psalm 96, verse 12 and 13. Let the fields be jubilant and everything in them. Then all the trees of the forest will sing for joy. They will sing before the Lord, for he comes to judge the earth. He will judge the world in righteousness and the peoples in his truth. So creation rejoices in the fact that God is the judge, and one day there will be a day of judgment. Things will be put right. The trees are singing for joy. Should we not be singing for joy? That one day everything will be put right. So the need for judgment. In the chapter we're looking at, there is the taunt of judgment. And so five times through Habakkuk 2, verse 6 to 20, you have this word, woe, woe, woe. Five times it comes. Now you could translate that word, woe, as ha. You're such a powerful nation. This is speaking to the Babylonians. You're so powerful. You've exploited the people. Ha! Your time is coming. Judgment will fall on you. So if you read verse 6, for instance, will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, ha! To him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion. Will you not your creditors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? And you will become their victim. Because you plundered many nations, the peoples who are left will plunder you. So there are five mocking statements that you have in Habakkuk 2, verse 6 to 20. The nations that have been plundered by the proud Babylonians will one day mock their conqueror. Here is the public shaming of the wicked. They've done what they liked. Now their day of reckoning will come. And remember, this is many years before it actually happened. Maybe 50 years, 40 years before Babylon was destroyed. Here is this mocking. You're so proud, you're so arrogant, but your day is coming when you'll be judged. Have a look at Psalm 2, verse 1 to 6. Why do the nations conspire and the peoples plot in vain? The kings of the earth take their stand and the rulers gather together against the Lord and against his anointed one. Let us break their chains, they say, and throw off their fetters. The one enthroned in heaven laughs. The Lord scoffs at them. Then he rebukes them in his anger and terrifies them in his wrath, saying, I have installed my king on Zion, my holy hill. So here you have the nations becoming powerful and thinking, I can do what I like. I can act however I like and destroy the lives of other people. And the one who is the king says, no, you foolish person. And he judges. He pours out his wrath. And so we look forward to the day when God will publicly vindicate the righteous. He will publicly make clear, here are people who have done what is good and right and who have trusted in me. There's a public display of that. We're looking for the day when God will openly display the disgrace of the arrogant, who thought they could do what they liked, and they seem to have got away with it. And on that day, there will be the public display of their arrogance and foolishness and cruelty. And God will publicly vindicate his nature, that he is a God of justice and mercy, that he is a God of righteousness and grace. Well, what's the case for judgment? What was God bringing against the Babylonians? And it's as if here is the prosecutor, and he's bringing the charges against the Babylonians. This is what you're guilty of. And I think it would be good for us to read Habakkuk 2, verse 6 to 20. So if you've got your Bible, just turn to Habakkuk 2, verse 6 to 20. Will not all of them taunt him with ridicule and scorn, saying, ha, to him who piles up stolen goods and makes himself wealthy by extortion? How long must this go on? Will not your debtors suddenly arise? Will they not wake up and make you tremble? Then you will become their victim, because you have plundered many nations. The peoples who are left will plunder you, for you have shed man's blood. You have destroyed lands and cities and everyone in them. Ha! To him who builds his realm by unjust gain, to set his nest on high, to escape the clutches of ruin. You have plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your own life. The stones of the wall will cry out, and the beams of the woodwork will echo it. Ha! To him who builds a city with bloodshed and establishes a town by crime. Has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is only fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? For the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. Ha! To him who gives drink to his neighbors, pouring it from the wineskin till they are drunk, so that he can gaze on their naked bodies. You will be filled with shame instead of glory. Now it is your turn. Drink and be exposed. The cup from the Lord's right hand is coming around to you, and disgrace will cover your glory. The violence you have done in Lebanon will overwhelm you, and your destruction of animals will terrify you, for you have shed man's blood. You have destroyed lands and cities, and everyone in them. Of what value is an idol, since a man has carved it, or an image that teaches lies? For he who makes it trusts in his own creation. He makes idols that cannot speak. Ha! To him who says to wood, come to life, or to lifeless stone, wake up. Can it give guidance? It is covered with gold and silver. There is no breath in it. But the Lord is in his holy temple. Let all the earth be silent before him. So here is what God saw as he looked at the Babylonians and what they had done. First of all, greedy, selfish ambition. They had plundered many nations. They had destroyed many lives in their insatiable greed. They had thought, we want to become more and more powerful. And all they thought of was gaining that power at the expense of the other nations. And the message comes to them, you have plundered others, you yourself are going to be plundered. And some years later, the Persians came and they totally destroyed Babylon. The city was destroyed. That was so rich, so strong, and it was plundered, gone. And you only have to read history and look at more recent events and see people who've had the same ambition, who've built themselves up, who've been selfish, and suddenly their fall is great. And I put the image up there of Saddam Hussein, who wanted to really recreate what Nebuchadnezzar had built in Babylon, saw himself as the next Nebuchadnezzar. And then you get that image of when he was captured and his statue, it's being pulled down in Baghdad. Greedy, selfish ambition. The day of judgment comes. Secondly, false security. And the picture in verse 9 is of building a fortress, building something that will stand and resist any enemy, be impregnable. Nebuchadnezzar, who was the king of the Babylonians, a great king, he built an outer wall around Babylon that was 136 feet thick. This was some wall, impregnable. And on every brick, he had the name Nebuchadnezzar inscribed. This is what I've achieved. He wrote an inscription that as a result of what he did, his reign would be everlasting. Well, it didn't last for many years. In about 539, the Persians came, and they destroyed what he had created. What a disaster to spend your whole life building something that will last forever, and then you come to the end of your life and you realize, I've wasted my life. What I've spent gaining, trying to achieve, is worthless. And so in verse 10, he says, you've plotted the ruin of many peoples, shaming your own house and forfeiting your life. You've trusted in something that's false, in your own power, in your own achievements. Doesn't that remind us of what Jesus said in Mark? He said, what good is it for a man to gain the whole world, yet forfeit his soul? Now, it's not possible for a man to gain the whole world, but even if it was possible for a man to have all the wealth in the world, all the riches of the world, and yet you lose your own soul, you come to the end of your life and you say, what did I do? Why was I so foolish, trusting in that? And I've forfeited my life. Or you have the parable of the rich fool who says, well, I've had a good harvest. I'll pull down my barns and I'll fill them with the harvest from the wonderful harvest that we have. And then I'll sit back and I'll say to myself, just relax and enjoy yourself. And God says to him that night, you fool. This very night your life will be demanded from you. Then who will get what you have prepared for yourself? It's foolish to trust in false security. Then thirdly, there was ruthless power. The Babylonians had great power. That's why they were able to go from nation to nation and to capture. And they destroyed people's lives. They built their great cities, particularly Babylon, through what they stole from other nations. And they would find that all their achievements have no lasting value. Verse 13, has not the Lord Almighty determined that the people's labor is fuel for the fire, that the nations exhaust themselves for nothing? You've had this power, you've used it ruthlessly, to gain, to steal from others, and you find in the end, it's all worthless. What actually will last is God's glory. And so verse 14 reminds us, for the earth will be filled with the knowledge of the glory of the Lord as the waters cover the sea. And we're going to look at this more closely next Sunday, along with verse 20. But here's the reminder. The great empire of the Babylonians rose and then fell. And the Persians came after them, and that's gone. And then the Greeks, and then they fell. And Rome, and then that collapsed. And then there was even the great Swedish Empire, and that fell. And then the British Empire, and that's disappeared. And the American Empire, and that's on its way down. Is it the Chinese Empire that's coming?